Podcast.
All right, it's the General. This is the Friday, May 29th, 2015. Hope I'm coming in clear. I'm using my cell phone here, and for whatever reason, whenever I play a track, it just comes in like crap. I can't hear it at all. So I think I tested this out before, though, and it actually comes through fine on the stream. And when you guys go to download it, it should be fine. So that was Battle Lore right there with Attack of the Orcs. And tonight, as it says in the show notes here, I got another pre-taped one for you. I mean, I am live. I am here if someone calls in. But, you know, I got two pretty long segments. I was unable to convert the final segment, the third part, which... I think it's another half an hour or so, but we got an hour and a half here of this kid, and he's a Persian guy, pretty smart, intelligent, works with Wolf CT, so that's how I found out about him. And he's, you know, just another guy in the wider struggle, I guess you could say, or the more transcendental fight, when it comes to, you know, uniting against the common enemy. So, you know, in the vein of that, I'm going to play this for you, and I hope you guys enjoy it. The sound quality is pretty bad. Well, I wouldn't say that. It's just really, you know, you're going to have to turn up the speakers to hear it, or to hear parts of it, especially when I'm speaking. I'm guessing, like, when I was charging the phone or the position I had the phone to record it, you know, maybe the internal mic was facing away from me, so I come in really kind of dull, but the guest is pretty clear, so that's good. And you know, it does work if you just turn it up. So especially if you download it, you guys can do that. Work, you know, just work with it with your computers, and it should be okay. And I'm hoping it's well received. So as you know, these are the shows I've been doing. Have been with various other guests. I'm looking to have, I was going to try to have Tom Sunick on tonight, but, you know, we got a 6-hour time differential. So, you know, he's really only available at night, which would kind of make it 4 a.m. for me to do the show. So if we can figure out a better, you know, time, or maybe he could come on a little earlier or something, we'll get him on the show. Because I think he's in Europe right now. You know, the guy travels around a lot. He's a pretty important figure in the movement. And, you know, I also wanted to say, too, that I'm not going out of my way to talk to, you know, non-whites or non-Western people. You know, and when it comes to Persians, I kind of, you know, differentiate them from other groups, because at least they have the Aryan roots there, and a lot of them do absolutely look pretty European, and, you know, have a more European mindset or Western than, say, Islamic, you know, and there's a lot of other reasons for that. But, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm not going out of my way here. I mean, just this kid definitely deserved to be heard, and I felt that it's another excellent example of how, if white nationalists are open, you know, and approach it with kind of an open mind, you know, you can't find allies and comrades out there where you might not expect necessarily. So, but in this case, I mean, there's every reason to understand why, you know, he would feel this way. And I think he knows his stuff, so I'm just gonna go right into it. And I only set the time for 90 minutes because it's like I said, I didn't get that third part down. So we'll try and maybe complete that for you next week. My the program I was using just crashed after I converted a couple files. My computer is not the best laptop, I guess, for doing this stuff, and I'm not the most technically astute person. I'm surprised I was even able to convert these files. I had to use a little tutorial on YouTube, so I'm proud of myself there. Anyway, I'm going to just find the files here, and then we'll play it. So let's see. Kid's name is Tiger CT, and here it is. Here's the first part. It's going to be go 50 minutes, and then the second part is, I think, like half an hour. So, again, tune your speakers accordingly, and we'll be back.
Hello to all. This is Dana Antiochus, the General, once again broadcasting for RenegadeBroadcasting.com. And we've got a great interview with you tonight lined up. This is... we are sitting here. We actually had a little trouble deciding between the two names. We're going to go with Tiger CT because he's in my home state here of Connecticut. But we were also contemplating Mujahideen and just calling him Dean. Call me Dean. James Dean. You know, you got it. So, but we're going to go with Tiger CT, sticking with the animal theme. And this guy's a really intelligent guest for you all. He's this is another example of a series, you could say, within Renegade Broadcasting, where we're trying to reach out to allies of different races, creeds, who understand the threat we face in this modern era against Jewish hegemony, and trying to establish working relationships between different races and nationalist groups. So this Tiger CT is of Persian origin. He wouldn't be the first Persian we have on the network. And he's very intelligent, very well-versed, knows his history, knows the politics, and is most importantly aware of Jewish supremacy. So we're going to be talking about these issues tonight, and I guess we'll just throw it right over to Tiger CT. We're going to start with a little biographical sketch. So Tiger, what's your roots, your background, and we'll just go with that.
Hey, how you doing? I grew up in New York. I was actually born in Tripoli, Libya. Came to New York when I was about 5-6 years old. Grew up in Grand Concourse, New York. And I was there for 25 years, then moved to Connecticut. Also, I am about to finish my undergrad in accounting. I go to a local university here in Connecticut. I'm about 4 classes away, and I'm also enrolled for the master's program. I don't know. That's about it, really.
Yeah, that's great. That's pretty impressive. So you're, I guess the most important thing there is you're Persian. And, in the white nationalist movement, you have a pretty, I would say, favorable view towards Persians as a race. Your typical white nationalist doesn't automatically assume or think, okay, well, they're white, they're part of our race, but a lot of them do,
right.
Especially depending on how they look, their phenotype,
right.
You know. So now, just to describe for the audience here, because they can't see you personally, I would say you absolutely have Aryan blood in you. Skin tone wise, phenotype, you're pretty dark. You're actually you're a little darker than what I would consider a typical Persian.
Right.
You know, and the same can go with Arabs too. I mean, you know, it's
right.
There's like a spectrum.
Right.
And how do you really see yourself? Because when I look at you, I see a dark kind of brownish guy. But you know, when it comes to your face, and you know, there's no doubt that you've got that Indo-Aryan blood in you.
Right.
So, I mean, how do you really view yourself?
Yeah,
racial.
Absolutely. My father is actually from Afghanistan. My mom is from Pakistan. I have aunts and uncles, you know, cousins throughout Iran. I have family members in all through the Arab world. I have family members all throughout the Persian world. You know, to be honest, I have family members almost all across throughout the Middle East, whether it be Persian or Arab. Now, when it comes to skin color, you know, the microcosm of the Arab and the Persian worlds, you know, you have a spectrum of light, dark, spectrum of very light to very dark, actually. And in that regard, I guess I would consider myself in between. Now, if you look at my parents, they're actually very light. If you look at my aunts and uncles, some of them are dark, some of them are light. If you look at my brother, he may be lighter than me, I might be darker than him. Now, in our culture, or more so in our lands, in our, you know, civilizations throughout history, we, I guess, interbreeded for so long that it got to a point where we don't know what we are anymore. It's almost to the point where it's a specific identity. It's not even a race anymore. It's not really a brown or white or black thing anymore. It's more of like an identity. Who are you? A cultural identity.
Right.
To be honest, if you could even say that a race and a culture intertwined, it would be a perfect example of that Persian land. That it almost intertwines. You don't know who is what, because racially, like one of my friends that I spoke to the other day, we were talking about family members, and you know, I showed him a picture of my cousin, and she looks, to him, 85% white. Then I showed him a picture of my mom, He said, she looks 80% white. Then I showed him a picture of my father. He said, oh, he looks about 50% white. So the concept, you know, there is so complicated. You know, you really can't pinpoint.
If you bring that to, like, our movement here today,
mm-hmm.
like I said, there's a lot of white nationalists who are very intelligent, very sophisticated, have a firm grasp over, you know, they're very worldly. They know this stuff.
Right.
But then you have others who, like, automatically would look at you and say you're not white. You know, you're not welcome. Why is the general Antiochus even talking to you?
Right. Absolutely.
So now, to me, you know, I think we really have grown past that type of thinking
mm-hmm.
for the most part. I mean, it still crops up, but they're going to see, the listeners are going to see very shortly why we're sitting down
absolutely.
Here together. You know,
go ahead. Point on that really quick.
Sure.
You know, the Jews don't discriminate on any race. So if they don't discriminate on any race and they say that every race.
Well, what do you, when you say discriminate, you mean they don't discriminate when it comes
on persecution, on
when it comes to them working with people to gain more power.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
The power spectrum of that they have, they don't discriminate. In that regard, I feel like if they don't discriminate,
we shouldn't,
because we have to band together in every race structure to try to fight these people, to put them down. To be honest, let's be real. They have more power than
ever before,
and we can't do it by only one solo
absolutely.
Race. It has to be by multiple races combined. And then afterwards, we'll figure out what's going on with that.
Sure. And Tiger, I've worked, my personal background, I started with a network called The Ugly Truth,
mm-hmm.
and their main focus was really Israel Zionism, but largely the Jewish problem.
Right.
And their whole strategy and idea was about, you know, getting races to all unite against that one enemy. Now, you know, I had a situation where, first of all, they kind of lean towards Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all excellent people, honorable people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we kind of left on good terms, but, you know, so, I mean, we're still friends.
Right.
I've jumped around to different networks. I found my home here in Renegade because I consider myself, you know, pretty anti-Christian on the pagan end of things.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and the other thing, too, is, like, it's not just about the Jews. It's about the white race
mm-hmm.
and racialism and trying to save our own people, but also recognizing the Jews are our greatest enemy, too. So, you know, how along with our own folks who have betrayed our race. So, I mean, that's an important thing for you to know about me in context, because, you know, this comes up all the time. It's like, you know, what should we focus more energy on? Trying to awaken our people who are lost or combat the main enemy? And I say, well, you know, part of the reason why our people are lost in the first place is because of the enemy. So, you know, it's hard to figure out really where you should put the effort into. Now, you are from a culture where you don't really have this problem racially. You still have your sense of identity,
mm-hmm.
your nationalism, your ethnic pride. You know, so we're like trying to come back from where we were in the past.
Absolutely.
So I mean, but we're all interlinked with this Jewish issue. So I mean. Go ahead. I mean, just flow with that, and we'll move on.
Yeah, I mean, to get a comeback of a racial structure for whites, you would actually need a very, very understanding of who you are first to get to the point of even battling, like you said.
So would you say, not to interject, but would you say nationalism in an ethnic sense is the first qualifier to even be able to have the capability to
absolutely
fight.
Absolutely, that's okay. That should be number one priority. You know, to know who you are is the first step to know your enemy. You know what I mean? And most people in here or other worlds or other countries or other lands and other places, majority of people don't know, even Muslims, like, you know, to be honest, I'm Muslim, and most of us, we don't even know who we are at this point. So to fight the Jews first, you need to know who you are. And that takes a lot of effort and energy.
Soul searching.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And to be honest, like the lands that's in the Middle East or the lands that's in Europe or the the lands of North America, first needs to realize that there has to be an independent construct of race. Mm-hmm. Without that, you cannot do it. Because
so now, okay, let's just go from there before we get into the second concept. Just we have seven concepts or topics lined up for you guys tonight, laid out. Isn't it a little bit of a conflict within Islam when it comes to race? Because isn't Islam so universalistic that it transcends race to the point where, just like Christianity, it makes it meaningless because you're all one in Allah?
Right.
Christ or whatever.
Right. Under Islam, most people think that it's so universalism, which it is, but it also isn't. Because even in Islam, even in, like, for example, the Hadith, even in the Quran, it kind of speaks about pertaining to your own kind. You should be with your own kind. Now, you know, your own kind could be generalized or it could be very specialized, you know, like specialized, but at that point, you have to realize what your own kind means. You know, in Islam, it actually speaks about the fact that people need to stay with their own. Now, if whites need to stay with whites, blacks need to stay with blacks, browns need to stay with browns, yellows need to stay with yellows, it actually is better. If you think about it, that creates the un-American way, which is like this.
Mix everything up.
Right, because when you mix everything up, this is a perfect example of what could happen. This is the equivalent of what melting pot means.
Right.
And
and the Jews were absolutely behind that.
Absolutely,
plan.
Without a question.
You know, if you look at the idea of the melting pot itself,
right.
I think was coined by one of them. I can't name him right now, but, you know, this whole concept of being rootless, not
right.
having a background, not knowing where you come from,
right.
your blood, your history.
And then throwing all together. It just
in
creates.
Mismatch.
Oh, you know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, you're always going to have conflict in that regard. You have
not only conflict, but even more importantly, you're going to have a lack of understanding in who, you know, you represent and what you fight for and the whole point of it all.
Right.
And, you know, really, the Jews, I think, have tried their hardest not only to weaken the identity and culture of the white race. You know, but that's been their main focus, I believe, in the last 50 years,
right.
because they consider us the biggest enemy. Maybe not so much now, because they have so much power and control over our race. But, you know, the point is that it's easier for them, A, to fit in and to control a population if they're not homogenous. And I think that's the most important thing. They want to mix things up because they know it's easier to control a group of rootless people.
Absolutely, because, you know, if you have people that have no identity, have no understanding of where they're from, you could easily manipulate. You know, the army does that best. They actually strip away all your identity, strip away everything that you know, and reformat it. And it's kind of the same concept that happens here when you strip away everyone's identity, you strip away everybody's understanding of who they are, and then you reformat it. And the Jews are doing this here and everywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and that's what you would call propaganda, programming, and conditioning.
Absolutely.
So, you know, what I wanted to say was that I bring this up because there is an academic named Dr. Kevin McDonald. He's got three books on this topic. Most importantly, The Culture of Critique, because he's talking about how the Jews or the Jewish intellectuals critiqued Western culture. And it was always in hostile negative terms because they were trying to do exactly what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
break down society and, you know, our norms and our you know, how we viewed ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that in order to not only usurp the WASP elites, but to make sure that now you have a bunch of folks that don't know who they are, they have no identity. So Jews are easily, like you said, manipulating
mm-hmm.
that situation. So let's just go into the Second World War and Hitler and how it relates to the Islamic world. Because, you know, there's so much out there now about this, and it goes many different ways. But I feel like, you know, you as a Persian and as a Muslim, coming from this perspective, have a very... this couldn't be understated as far as the importance of this, because, you know, this is how you're coming from a huge culture, a huge base of people,
yeah.
And their attitudes towards Second World War, Hitler,
mm-hmm.
Nazi Germany, what are they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you remember, when Hitler had his own groups of countries that formed, a lot of Arab countries was actually part of that group. You know, a lot of people just forget that Italy was part of that group. So was Arab nations, you know, Algeria, Libya, North Africa, right?
Tanzania.
So a lot of countries was actually part with or sided with Hitler's concepts or his regards. You know, and to be honest, the Islamic point of view and my point of view is similar, and it is not at the same regard, too. My point of view is that Hitler was a genius. You know, he did what he is supposed to do when any kind of foreign groups come into a country and take over in the most outrageous of ways. When you talk about, you know, the Ashkenazi Jews in Germany and how they took over Germany in the early 1900s and the late 1800s by bank systems, accounting systems, financial systems, you know, you name it, you know, businesses, they took over almost, I would say more than half, maybe even more, like maybe even 80-90% of the finances that was happening in Germany. And if you remember, they were the very minute of population. They were literally the minutest. You know, if you think about it, they controlled, just like here, majority of the finances while being the minority of the population.
Right. And we were just talking about the Federal Reserve System.
Right. So, you know, in the Islamic point of view of Hitler, and my point of view is that they were doing what was right for their nation. Even in Islam, a lot of people may not know this, in the Quran itself, does not paint a great picture of the Jews. They actually say in the Hadith and the Quran that stay away from them. Be mindful of who they are. Be very, very wary of what they say to you, how they could trick you, how they could do this, and how they could do that.
Sure.
So right there you could see that Hitler's concepts and his mentality
right.
was very linear with the Islamic
and
concept.
The Zionists today love to, because of course Israel is under attack
mm-hmm.
as being a nationalistic nation,
mm-hmm.
the last really within the Western world. Now, I don't consider Israel part of the Western
Absolutely.
World, but they always try to insert that.
Right.
You know, but the point is that, see, this is where it becomes confusing and weird, because I'm a nationalist,
mm-hmm.
I'm an ethno-nationalist and a race nationalist, but the way the Jews have made it with the West, the only country that's allowed to have nationalism is Israel.
Right.
The white countries, you know,
right.
are not allowed because that would make them Nazis. But the funny thing is that, you know, the left has turned Israel into a pariah state, rightfully so, and I think that's great. But they always make this connection that Israel is like the modern Nazi state. And I hate that because, for obvious reasons. But I only bring it up because I think that what you said is important about, you know, just how everybody views Hitler. Because if you look at Hitler with Mufti, Grand
mm-hmm.
Mufti
mm-hmm.
of Egypt,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Zionists today love to try to say, look, all this propaganda saying Israel's a Nazi state and the Jews are the modern Nazis, well, the real Nazis were with the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, how do you feel about all this?
Yeah, I mean, for Jews to say that Muslims are Nazis is...
You know, it's funny, because they even have a word for it, the Islamo-fascist.
Islamo-fascist,
right?
Well, I'd say this much. You know, the Jews are surrounded by Muslims. They are surrounded in the north, they're surrounded in the east, they're surrounded in the west, they're surrounded in the south. For us to be Nazis, per se, is kind of funny because we're not going over to other places to take over. We're not going to other places to control. And if we are Nazis, we are Nazis amongst ourselves.
That's funny. So, I mean, basically, look, let's be honest here. Hitler was in a very tough position. And I don't want to go. We have a lot of shows about, you know, the Third Reich and mistakes they made militarily and all that. But, you know, really, I see Islam as, you know, a religion that absolutely could be a second tier or even a, you know, a direct partner with an awakened white nationalist imperium. You know, if the Aryans, once they get it together, I think Islam and the Aryans could absolutely form a united front.
Yeah, easily. And I'll tell you why. It's because it promotes individualism. It promotes a group of people, you know, guided by
collectivism or collectivism or individualism?
Both, actually.
Both.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was going to get to that. Like, they promote individualism, meaning that a person can easily identify with who they are and, you know, act on it. So if someone is white and they want to have a white wife, they can easily have it in Islam because it calls for you to be with your own.
Right.
And group-wise, it's, you know, like, you know, it says the entire group should be, I guess you would say the entire group should be united under that front of individualism. So if one group is all white, there's nothing wrong with that in Islam. So if a group is all white, and they, that group or nation or land or community or whatever you want to call it, wants to be with only white, there's nothing wrong with that. It's absolutely accepted in Islam that, you know, and it's to the point where
that's
like
a natural state of affairs.
Natural state of affairs.
Right.
And, you know, and if you choose not to, now Islam doesn't, it's not against that at all.
Now, I haven't read the Quran, but I just want to, like, kind of as a little tangent. You know how, like, in Judaism, you have Yahweh. In the New Testament, you have Christ speaking through the Father. Is Allah kind of a father figure, kind of a patriarchal anthropomorphic God? Or is Allah a more universalist concept? How would you describe it?
Yeah. In Islam, Allah is actually a universal concept. It's pertaining that Allah is for everyone. It's in Islam, it speaks about that we are all born Muslim. Whether Jews were born Jews, they're actually Muslims. Whether Christians were born Christians, they're actually Muslims. When you are born, when you take that first breath, it is said that you are born Muslim already. Now, if you want to say that later on in life, you decide to become Christian, or later in life, you decide to be Hindu, or later in life, you decide to be Jewish. That's on your regard.
Right.
Now, what happens after that? That's on you. But when you were born, they say in Islam that Allah gave you, Allah, which being the supreme power, almighty, the all-encompassing, you know, universalism. That's the person that gave you Islam when you were born. Now, later in life, as you grow older, as you, you know, you become whatever you want to become, that's on you.
Here's one thing, is that, like I've said, in white nationalist circles, it's pretty, you know, first of all, you have all the clips of, like, all these North Africans, and a lot of, like, Africans are piling into Europe, and we're going to get to this. I don't want to talk about it now, but I'm just giving you the perception from a white nationalist viewpoint. You know, they see Islam as just a universalistic religion of a bunch of brown and black people.
Absolutely.
And you know, and white thrown in there, but pretty much what I, you know, black and brown. And, you know, I think the problem is that what they don't take into account is the collectivism and the fact that, you know, like, if you look at Bosnians, they're very super tribalistic, you know, notwithstanding that they are, you know, a white ethnic group in and of themselves. That's not even the point. The point I'm making is, like, the tribalism of Bosnians, of Pashtuns, of Pakistanis, of
Kurdish.
You know, Kurdish, Albanians. I mean, I've never seen a more tribal system than within Islam. So when people say it's a race mixing religion that's universalistic, I think that's just so far off the mark.
It is, because, like you said, that we are tribalistic and we promote tribalistic. We promote your personal group that you belong to be as dominant as you can be, and also be in regards to the other tribes and communities that's trying to be dominant with them. So we in a sense, We are universalistic, as in we are under one banner.
As in you're all brothers within.
In one banner, right.
But I've got my tribe here.
Absolutely.
You've got your tribe there.
Right.
And we're sitting under the same mosque.
Right. And to be honest, if you leave that mosque and you go to your community and I go to my community, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If you have an all-white community that's in the side and I have an all-brown or Persian community on the other side, there's nothing wrong with that. Now, does it say that you can still mix? Can you still go to other communities? Is it acceptable? Yes.
Right.
Islam doesn't deny it.
So it's not condemned, but it's not condoned.
Exactly. It's neither or.
Right.
There's no, hey, you cannot do this.
Right.
You know, or, hey, you have to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now, see how fast, like, we're already almost up to a half hour.
Yeah.
See how easily we can do 4 or 5 hours? So, okay. All right. Moving on to number three. We're going to talk a little bit about ISIS and the current state of Islamic turmoil and Jewish control, Zionist control in the Middle East. You know, I had a friend on the last, a very close comrade, who mentioned on the last roundtable, he's like, you know, why isn't ISIS attacking Israel? You know, and I guess we could just go there with that. I mean, what do you see ISIS as? Like,
yeah, you know, ISIS is a very peculiar thing, is because, you know, they promote fundamentalism and Islamic fundamentalism. But at the same regard, they do actually the opposite of what fundamental Islamic is. If you kill your own, which is a Muslim killing another Muslim, you know, you're not being fundamental anymore. You know, that's actually anti-fundamental.
Right.
You know?
You're being heretic.
Exactly. You know, because think about it like this, is that, you know, if you look at the news, if you watch TV, you will see many articles and many news everywhere saying how ISIS is killing Muslims.
Right.
Mostly, you know. And when you hear something like that, and then you see the media propaganda saying they're Muslims, it's almost, you know, contradictory if you think about it. Like, how could that be? It's like saying, hey, you're white, go outside and kill white. You have to be a white supremacist because of that. How could you be a white supremacist if you're out there killing other white people?
Right.
You know what I mean?
I'll admit that, A, you know, things get perverted. Look at the fact that you have so-called Christians killing. Okay, I was thinking the other day about with the conflict in Ireland over the you know, the Catholics and the Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when we were going to school, there was a horrible massacre. A guy, and he killed 30 Catholic children.
Right.
Actually, I don't know if they were. I'm pretty sure they were Catholics, and he was on the other side. But does it really matter? I mean, because really,
what I'm saying is,
you know, to me, that is the most disgusting thing in the world.
Yeah.
And as a Muslim, when they do the same thing, you know, it must be the
absolutely,
same.
Absolutely, because, you know, when ISIS does what they do, it kind of makes you wonder, what do they really represent? Because in Islam, you know, one, you're not supposed to kill unless you're being threatened. Now, I can guarantee that, you know, just by what I read, seeing what I've seen on TV and et cetera, you know, they're not killing off of threat. They're killing off of, I want you to be what I want you to be.
Right.
You know, and the funny part is that when they do kill for saying, I want you to be what I want you to be, they don't even know what it is. They are
aren't they basically Sunni fundamentalists?
Absolutely. Right. And you know what?
And I mean, are they Wahhabis or what? Like, are they Salafists? I mean, like, what, you know, how...
You know, they never actually stated what they are. To be honest, like, you know, everywhere I looked, they don't say they're Wahhabis, they don't say they're Salafi, they don't say they're, you know, Shiite or Sunni. Well, I know they're Sunni.
Right.
But they don't say that they're, you know, any specific group.
Right.
You know, now, you know, to me, they're very closely related to Wahhabism. You know, they want to control everything in the world in Islamic fashion.
So it's an imperialistic.
It's a
mindset.
Very imperialistic
mindset. They think
mindset.
That this time
right.
the world.
But the weird part is that their mindset is actually anti-Islam. Because in Islam, imperialism and Islam does not match.
Now, as a Persian, you know, Ron Paul recently said, if we were serious about it. See, the thing is, it's funny because, like, you know, Obama with his whole nuclear deal with Iran, Don't you think Hezbollah and the Quds Force could have wiped the floor with ISIS if allowed them, and or the Shiite militias? But see, the thing is, you got Iraq and you got the Sunnis, and they don't want to work with Shiites against ISIS, even if they hate ISIS, right?
Right.
So,
see, the thing about that, it's kind of interesting, is that nobody wants to work with ISIS, and nor do they want to work with anyone else. Now, when that happens in Islamic lands, you have to question. Like you said, there's red flags. You don't know what's going on, you know. And when I see something like that, where no Islamic groups wants to work with ISIS, and they don't want to work with any other Islamic groups, that automatically suggests to me this raises a red flag. Are they controlled by other sources that we don't know about? Are they controlled by Jewish control?
So do you think ISIS absolutely could be a Zionist proxy force?
Yeah, you know, and that's a very big possibility. I'll be honest with you. Because the way they act, the way they move, you know, even when I seen an interview from an ISIS person in TV, and that person, this is the funniest thing. Now, listen to this story. Here's a guy driving. He's a news reporter. And if you guys want to go reference this and check it out on the internet, you could absolutely do so. It's there. So this person, he's driving. He's driving from one border to another, or one land to another land.
Yeah, Syria or Iraq?
Yeah, I think it was Syria. And that person gets pulled over by ISIS. Right?
Oh, my God.
Right. He gets pulled over by ISIS. He's a journalist. He's a white American, I think, or maybe European. I'm not sure. Gets pulled over by ISIS and basically has a gun to his head. And the guy, the ISIS, says to him, recite the Quran. So he recites the Bible back to him.
Oh, really?
Guess
like
what?
The Old Testament?
I'm not sure. I just read it in our...
Well, he didn't know the Quran.
Right.
You know, the funny thing would be, what if he did know the Quran?
Exactly. So he recites the Bible, and the guy, the ISIS guy, says, hey, go ahead, don't worry about it. You're good to go.
I mean, that is a fun story.
Yeah.
So, all right, but I just think, like, to me,
if they're very fundamentalist, like they say they are,
yeah, they would have known automatically.
They would have known.
Well, see, look, it's already been kind of proven. It's a general understanding that that ISIS, you know, are a bunch of disenfranchised Muslims that are pissed off and they see this movement and they're just joining it.
Right.
They might not even really know what it is.
I'll be honest. This is my honest opinion about ISIS. I think it's just a band of very, very uneducated, unintelligent, low economic people that got together and said, hey, we want to fight. Now, what are we fighting for? I have no idea.
Right.
But we'll fight, you know?
All right, so let's say L'Chaim. L'Chaim. Or Nostrovia. Nostrovia. Or Salut. And we're going to do...
Vanya.
So anyway, let's see where we were at here. We're moving into number four. All right. This is a big bone to pick here because there's a lot of... First of all, I'm gonna say, as a white nationalist, I hate the Zionist-led wars against the Middle East. I hate them. Okay?
Absolutely.
That's part of the reason we're doing this. We're trying to stop
this.
Right,
exactly,
And, you know, part of a...
and they control all over.
There's a million reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one geopolitical reason.
Absolutely, yeah.
And as a result of these wars, you get a lot of immigrants that are displaced that come into Europe.
Right.
Now, and following the path of that, you got a lot of Africans who aren't even Muslims. They're
right.
Just straight up Africans, you know. So
there's a huge immigration problem in Europe.
Right, and that's what we're going to talk about, is Muslim immigration into Europe. Because as a white nationalist, you can understand why I don't want them there.
Yeah,
I don't feel they have any right
they
there.
They don't, and they don't.
Okay, go ahead.
To be honest, you know, in Islam, you know, it's very, very preferred, and I would say almost mandatory, to the fact that you, as a Muslim, should not be in a non-Islamic land. If you're a Muslim and you're in a non-Islamic land, you're actually kind of
breaking rules,
breaking procedures. And the reason being is this, is that if you're a Muslim and you're in a non-Islamic land, whether it be Europe, whether it be America, South America, any country that's not Islamic culturally, right, and religiously, you have a harder time practicing your religion. So in that sense,
because you're a minority.
Not just that you're a minority, but the cultures and customs don't match your cultures and customs.
Right.
Your religious doesn't even match you.
Right.
So if you walk outside your door and inside your house you're praying five times a day and, you know, you understand all the Quran and Hadith, as soon as you walk out, it will be contradictory to what you just read. Because if in the Quran it says, hey, don't touch a woman, and you should walk outside, I can promise you, sooner or later,
right,
you will be in contact with women. Whether it's, you know, by waving or visually or, you know, physically, you will be in contact. And same regard goes to other aspects, drinking, smoking, because, you know, if you go
all the temptations.
All the temptations.
Right.
You know, if you go to Islamic land,
right,
there is no liquor store. It's actually banned.
Right.
There's not one liquor store in any Islamic land. Now, is there underground liquor stores and, you know, ways you can get it? Probably. I'm not real positive on it.
Right.
But there's definitely nothing public. Now, when you're a Muslim and you're in a non-Islamic land and you walk outside and you see liquor stores, you're susceptible to being a drunk or
right,
drinking.
Well, it's the same
drunk
idea of having the woman covered. Because it's
right,
like, why even tempt yourself with the
right, exactly.
So, now, this comes in a direct conflict with the pagan viewpoint. And basically, you know, as an Aryan pagan, you know, we celebrate the body.
Mm-hmm.
We celebrate the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's beautiful.
Right,
the idea of a woman's long hair,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know, in the sun,
mm-hmm,
flowing in the wind. I mean, that is what nature is. That's what it's all about.
Right, right.
Now, and I know that totally
is against the Islamic.
Right.
Right.
And they, oh, well, go ahead.
Yeah. And to speak on that, and see, in Islam, it kind of explains that if and I'll give you a really good example. I told somebody else before. Wolf CT, actually.
So this is Tiger CT.
Telling Wolf CT this on some other
So
if you have a womb, and this is very, very, you know, similar. Not similar, but I would say this is kind of like the you know, fundamental concept of Islam. If you have a womb full of 30 people, and 30 people drink, 29 of them could handle themselves, and one cannot. One gets drunk, either gets drunk to the point where he's violent against himself or violent against someone else.
Right.
In Islam, we are a very, very, you know, total effort. It's a total effort for Islam. It's not
right,
one. We don't have that concept. Hey,
it's totalitarianism.
Yeah, it kind of is, you know. And so if 30 people are getting drunk, 29. Is okay, but one is not.
Right.
Our concept, our rules basically say if one could be disastrous to the group or to himself, we'd take it out completely.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like what happens with Islam. And a lot of the rules that we have in Islam
right,
is because of that.
Right.
Now go back to that real quickly to the immigration to Europe. None of the Muslims that's in Europe should actually be there, to be honest. You know what I mean? There should not be.
Now,
there.
We'll see. Why don't you say something? Why don't you say something?
I'm enjoying listening to Tiger CG over here.
Oh, no, you're not getting away with that.
So, well,
I thought you were thinking of something.
A lot of the conversations that me and Tiger CT, because we had met at our place of employment, is the, you know, the Muslims in Europe and the fact that there's a lot of, you know, crimes committed against the white population and how an Islamic person would feel about that,
right,
considering that they would never condone that in their own lands.
Yeah, I mean, okay. And specifically is the example of Sweden. What's happening in Sweden of the rape cases that's happening with a lot of the immigration that's coming in Sweden?
Yeah.
I read the Oslo report in 2010
now,
by the police department.
Really quick, like, there's a lot of, like, this is a source of a lot of enmity between white nationalists and Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, some who defend the Muslims say, no, this is all Zionist cooked propaganda.
Right.
It's not true. And
no, I'm pretty sure that it's not propaganda.
I mean,
I'm pretty sure there's an aspect of it.
It may not be 100%
right,
what you're saying.
Right, exactly.
But the fact that one
even
this girl or Norwegian
right,
girl is getting raped by a foreign alien.
Yeah. One is too many. One is too many. And the reality is that comes about, you know, the product is coming from the immigration that's
right,
happening in Europe.
Right.
Now, you know, Europe is all white land. It's always been like that.
It should be.
It
isn't anymore.
Right. It is,
right.
You know, so when all these immigration status Muslims, and I don't speak speak about other immigration because that doesn't pertain to me. I'm not really, you know, But for Muslims, I will speak on that.
Right.
If immigration, Muslims are coming into Europe, right? And they don't live there, prior. And they don't have family, they're nothing like that. But we're just talking about straight up immigration coming into Europe.
Yeah.
That's absolutely haram. And haram in Islam basically means it's forbidden. It should not be happening. Right. You know what I mean? Like they should not be coming into Europe because of
that. Even if they're trying to make a better life.
Even if they're trying to make a better life. Right. Even because to be honest, you're not making a better life under the Islamic rules.
Right. Okay.
To be honest. You know what I mean?
Now, okay, so we got that out of the way. I mean, and this is what I'm trying to tell you people, is that, you know, you can't sit and assume every non-white person, every Muslim, or every, you know, whatever, automatically toes the leftist, you know, line that, you know, which is, you know, essentially an anti-white position. I mean, I'm sitting right here with I consider you, Tiger CT, to be pro-white, in that you want the best for all races.
Absolutely.
You know, and you understand what's been taken from us. You understand just how inverted and how subverted and usurped our culture has become. And the fact that it should, you know, that you even care shows your altruism towards us. And I think that ultimately, really, you know, this is about everybody, because if they get their way, if they win, you know, we're looking at a world that is just sick.
Absolutely.
We can't allow
this. Right. I mean, you know, the Jewish people or the Jewish concepts, Jewish religion, it's a cancer. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, that's the only way I can explain it, is that they are a cancer. And if
it's so intense.
And if you don't nip that cancer before it gets worse, which is already, I mean, it's already pretty bad as it is. If you don't nip it, then there's something wrong. You just can't make this. You just can't be successful anymore.
But you know, absolutely. I think this is really what it's all about. We're getting to the nitty gritty here.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll just move on to point five about the possibility of a white nationalist. Well, go ahead. You had something else.
You know what? Before we even get to that,
because that's
point,
a big one.
Yeah. Before we even get to that point, I want to speak about Hitler. I want to explain.
Okay, all right. Fine. Okay. 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 Talk about Hitler.
There's always room for Hitler.
I want to explain that, you know, majority of Arabs and Persians, they know that Hitler was in the right path. They knew that. Now, you know, whatever propaganda that the Western media, the Jewish media, really, has propagated, you know, most Arabs and Persians are actually past that by now. They kind of know. Like, we, you know, we're very, like, our religion.
Well, you would think they weren't even susceptible in the first place.
Right, exactly. You know, we knew right away, like, hey, we know what you're doing. We understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. You know, and that's a problem that they try to hide in this country. They try to hide to these people here that, hey, Muslims are this anti-white, anti, you know, Hitler, anti-everything, this and that. But in reality, this is the truth. And maybe many of you...
They
maybe not love
him. Well, I mean, you guys have all...
We definitely side with them. We can guarantee...
We've all seen that iconic image that I'm sure Pamela Geller probably
used
for propaganda purposes. But, you know, there's this woman, she's a Muslim woman,
right.
And she's covered, you know, head to toe. But she's got this sign saying, God bless Hitler.
And Hitler had it right. He knew what he was doing. He honestly, and this might sound crazy, you know, but I wish he did win. I wish he did win.
Right.
Because, you know,
let's just think of how
Europe would have been a lot like the Middle East in the sense that where we want, the coexistence.
In the positive sense.
Right, the positive, absolutely.
Right.
We're
not the Middle East today.
No. But we're talking about unity and that regard.
Well, and that's why, you know, really, this idea of, and my friend, you know, he runs this website called Mind Weapons of Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
Ragnarok is the Nordic kind of Viking mythology apocalypse.
Right.
Okay. Is there a word in Islam for the apocalypse?
Yeah.
And guys, I'm gonna have mine weapons.
You guys,
we're gonna have mine weapons as a whole. We're gonna do a whole show real soon. Okay, so that's coming up too.
That's gonna be good.
That's gonna be great. So, mine weapons. Me and here and Wolf CT, we were going to a pagan festival out in Pennsylvania, and he played for us in the car this Hamas song. It's like, what is it called?
I don't even know.
Strike a blow.
guys, that was big business with no vowels right there. And I've got another half-hour segment of Tiger CT. And, you know, I wanted to just say as well, just to throw it out there, over the course of the last couple of weeks on Russian TV, I saw, again, Richard Spencer, and I saw the head of Red Ice Radio, Hendrick. So that was great news to see him on TV there. I forgot what he was what it was in reference to, but, you know, they pulled him up for something. So, and we got a caller here, a 205 number. So maybe quickly before I play the second part of this, there's only 22 minutes left of the stream. I just wanted to see if the caller had anything to say or comment. Let's see who this is. 205, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Hello, 205? All right, well, maybe he's just listening. So I guess I'll just go right back into the recording here. Let me find it. And like I said, another 20 minutes left in the stream, so it will go a little over, probably 10 minutes or so into the recording, and you guys can all catch that on the download. I think it's the sound isn't as bad as I thought, because I'm hearing it not so bad on my my phone here. So, all right, this is a half an hour, and this. All right, folks, we are recording again. We had some technical difficulties, but we are back with Tiger CT, Wolf CT, and myself, the General Dan Antiochus. So we're moving on, but before we do, we just wanted to recap the last point we were talking about. I brought up Mind Weapons of Ragnarok and his thought about a Nazi caliphate and the idea of Indo-European peoples collaborating, working with the Muslim world against world Jewry. So I think this is really can't be understated, because this is ultimately the main point is not only white nationalists, Muslims, it's everybody. It's the Chinese, it's the Japanese, it's the Polynesians, even the Native Americans, you know, the indigenous Peruvian Indians. I mean, and, you know, really, we need every single able-bodied person to combat this alien influence. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, back to that point where the white Nazi is necessary. You know, my understanding is this.
And by Nazi, you mean a racially conscious national socialist.
Absolutely, not the stupid word that people throw out.
Exactly.
Or, you know, Jewish Nazi, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I just wanted to make sure that was...
And, you know, that is absolutely necessary for the whites in America, the whites in Europe, the whites all around the world to band together. Because there's no other way. That's the ultimate way. Now, you know, me being Muslim, obviously I'm going to say, hey, you can always band together in Islam. But that's a concept that, you know.
Right. I mean, do you really think, okay, you know what, I've even had this thought. And I said to myself, for white people living under the total domination of Jewish supremacy at this point. We have two options, realistic options. We can either find our Aryan souls and our roots and our blood, you know, and become what we were meant to be, you know, and just be who we are. Or we can succumb to Islam as the only force that truly is threatening world Jewry. And I believe that with 100%, and I'll tell you right now, I hate these people so much that I would be willing. I don't want them to win. Even if we go down and we lose, I still don't want them to win.
Right.
So I would, if I, you know, figured that all right, white nationalism is gone, it's not going to work. I would still become a Muslim if, at the end of the day, that was the only path.
Yeah, I mean, even afterwards.
And I know a lot of people are gonna hate me for that. A lot of listeners are gonna, you know, they're gonna hate that. But go ahead.
But you know, even if, let's say, you know, people decided you become to fight you. If it ever came down to that. I'm not promoting anything.
There's a guy named David Mayette. He look this up. David Mayette. David M-Y-A-T-T. He's got a whole series of writings where he tries to show how Islam and National Socialism are compatible. But I just figured I'd throw that out for show notes.
It's very compatible. I mean, to be honest, we definitely share the common enemy, first and foremost. Second is that, you know, a white national movement and an Islamic movement, or Islamic in general, is very similar in regards to strictness. You know, you want to be able to do what you do at the utmost strict.
What's that? No, keep going. Go ahead. What were we talking about? Every once in a while, you said, you have... Oh, wait, I'm reading this. I'm sorry. I'm getting... All right. We were talking basically about this concept of a Nazi caliphate, okay? Scaring the Jews out of their boots. And if you look at everything going on today, the fact that there's so much Muslim immigration, Europe is already anti-Zionist without the Muslims. With the Muslims, they're even more anti-Zionist. And I think they're waking up to the Jewish problem. And the fact that the Germans did a great job, whether you're a Holocaust revisionist or not, I'm sorry, guys, but there's entire nations in Europe that are Judenfrei, okay? They are not under the domination and control of the Jews anymore, okay?
Even with the Holocaust, you know,
right.
The statistics on that is...
It's funny. The last girl I had on, the black girl, she told me about some show called The Daily Show. Instead of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, The Daily Show. You know, isn't that great? But yeah, we were just talking about. And I wanted to tell you guys, too, here's another point. On National Public Radio this week, they had a segment about how birds are racist. Birds are racist, guys.
I believe it.
And you can look this up. This is about how some studies and research have shown that there's some phenomenon in the animal kingdom with birds where if, you know, a female bird, you know, drops her egg in another bird's nest, and it's not from the same exact type of bird, the bird who has created that nest sniffs it out, realizes that it's not her eggs, and probably will not devote the same time, energy, and resources to those eggs. So, I mean, you know, it's like, look, nature or God or Allah or the, you know, whatever, the universal consciousness, has created this system, okay? So this is like where religion, universalism, all these things come together. Because it's like, look, you know, love your own race, fight for them, but there's got to be something that bonds us as humans. The Jews, I don't really look at as human. I think they are some type of parasitical force in the sense that, you know, they are... I mean, really, and let's talk about them a little bit. Like Judaism, okay, I see them as a malevolent ideology or a religion, and I don't really look at them as a race. You know, I think that's the mistake a lot of white nationalists make.
Right.
And if you read, you know, Alfred Rosenberg, who called them the anti-race, that's kind of how I see them as. I see them as a force that is in opposition to all traditional norms.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at, you know, something else I told what's this the other day, like, for example, if tomorrow all black people somehow became the rulers of the earth, I can promise you within an hour all the Jewish people will become black.
They figure it out automatically.
Yep.
You know?
All of a sudden, you'll see millions of black Jews walking around. You're wondering, where the heck did this come
from? Yeah, you're right. Totally. I mean, and I think, you know, this is another thing, too, that we should get into because, you know, blacks have a hard time differentiating between Jews and whites. They see us all as the same thing.
Right.
And they don't realize there's a war going on between
the Jewish elites and,
right.
and the white.
Absolutely.
You know, and well, go ahead, because I mean,
yeah,
really,
yeah.
I, don't you think that's important? Because
yeah, absolutely it is. Because
do Muslims make that distinction at least?
I think that I would say, you know, within the inner circle of Muslims and just being around family members, friends of family members, you know, I see that almost in my experience, 90 to 95% of Muslims understand the Jewish problem. You know, it's just a common fact. Now, when it comes to blacks, unfortunately, I just don't understand why they don't understand it. It could be lack of education. I've been to Africa. I've been to Europe. I've been to Asia. I've been to, you know, a lot of continents. And a lot of the black people that I've come across, for some strange reason, they just don't understand that concept. Whether it be by negligence, naiveness, who knows? But they don't get that concept. It's just a common fact.
Don't you see the danger in that? Because now, when a black, like, you know, the guy, and I brought this up with the black girl I just interviewed, the guy that was, he owns like a football team or basketball team.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, he's going out with some like, Mexican.
Donald Sterling.
Oh, yeah. Or Tokowitz, right. You know, and he does something racist. You know, white people get blamed for that. You know, and the non-white world thinks, oh, that's a white guy being racist.
Right.
I don't realize he's a Jew. You know, I don't realize Judaism is a racism.
And you know, you should actually explain that thing about how a Jew, when he's white, he wants to be white. When he's not, he's something else.
Well, right. Sure. When he commits crimes,
yeah.
He's white. And when he wants to play the victim card, oh, I'm a Jew, I suffered, and you know,
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
That whole freaking card.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious. That's
you know, this is the thing. And this is what makes the Jews as a people, you know, a non-people. Because, you know, they essentially, they change their names. If they're on a boat going to Hungary, they're Hungarians. If they're going to Italy, they're Italians. I mean, you know, they have no real background. No real connection to the land, to the culture. You know, they just change willy-nilly for their survival. So, and, you know, this is a funny thing. Is like, this has been going on for thousands of years. So I wanted to bring up, you know, there's a lot of talk about, like, Christians. You know, they always bring up this idea of the Khazar, the Khazarian hypothesis. Have you studied this at all?
No, this is
the theory, and there's some truth to it, is that in the 8th or the 9th century, an entire Turkish kingdom called the Khazars, K-H-A-Z-A-R-S, converted to Judaism in the same way that the Christians converted to Christianity under Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
The legend is that, you know, the Khanate there, who was a Turk of some kind, he brought in Christian monks and Islamic, you know, what would they be?
Imams
and Jewish rabbis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they looked at it and they said, okay, we got to decide which monotheistic religion we're going to become.
Yeah.
And, you know, before that, they're worshiping Turkish animal spirits or whatever, you know.
The bull.
You know, so the elk. You know,
sure.
Or whatever. So they choose Judaism. Somehow they figure out, oh, these guys got something going on. You know, we'll go with them. And, you know, the theory is that all Ashkenazi or, you know, especially Eastern European Jewry descend from this Turkish kingdom who are converts to Judaism rather than actual Jews. Now, if you understand Judaism and the Jews, they're all converts
right,
to some
sure,
extent.
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah, they look Jewish. But what does that really mean? You know, really, all it means is that they look a little odd, they look a little weird, they've got exaggerated features. You know, they're not your typical Irishman, you know, or Italian. And, you know, that's the thing, is that, like, they're not a race.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to
say. Yeah, to even go past that,
yeah.
I mean, if you look at Jews as their religion, you know, their principles, their scriptures, you know,
Talmud,
right.
Torah,
you know, this is the interesting thing about Judaism and Jewish people. They have done an excellent job of hiding.
And revealing.
Revealing their words, the scriptures.
The real motives.
The real motives. To be honest, you know, I hear America and Europe speak so much about Muslims being this crazy race and crazy people.
Yeah,
and, you know, disastrous for the
secretive jihadists.
Right, all of this stuff. To be honest,
right.
I don't think there's more jihadi people or more crazier people than Jewish people.
Oh, yeah,
they
yeah,
are
yeah.
the craziest.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And
the religion mandates it.
Right, the religion mandates.
And even without the religion.
Right.
See, that's the thing. It's their actions.
Their
people mandated.
Right.
I mean,
people,
that,
right.
you know, that, I mean, there's more. Look at the Bolshevik atheistic Jews.
Right.
Look at the liberal multiculturalist Jews.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're not reading the Torah.
Yeah. And there's absolutely something wrong with the fact that, you know, very minute population controls the world. I mean, that right there is a red flag. That shows you right there that something's wrong. What is going on? And most people, unfortunately, eat up the propaganda that comes from media that's run by these same people that are owning everything else, and they fall for it. And they fall for it like, you know, like cake. They fall
oh, yeah.
for it like
that. Like dominoes.
Yeah.
So... All right, let's see. Where's my list?
I the last thing.
Oh, you got it.
Okay,
okay, so we're moving on, guys. So now we're going to move into, we got two more topics, and we got some side issues here. I would love, you know, we're going to get Tiger CT on live so that you can take your calls, because I know you're going to want to call in and refute him or debate him or agree with him. You know, I'm sure most of our listeners will be in total sympathy and agreement with you. But, you know, moving on here, we've got the idea of bridging the gap between the races. We actually kind of talked about that a little bit. So I guess I'm just going to move on because it's really a non-issue at this point. We're sitting here, you know, and here, I'll bring this one up. Within the white nationalist community, because they are racial centric, you know, they really make that their main point. It's not about spirituality. It's
yeah.
more about blood, really.
Right, absolutely.
Some of them would look at you. Well, I would say, I don't know. We'll see. How would you answer this? Because, I mean, I think a majority of people in our movement, if they hear this man,
mm-hmm.
they would absolutely look at him as a brother and a friend.
Yeah, I mean, the fact
but,
that...
But, you know, if they
yeah.
look at him, though,
mm-hmm.
I mean, here's a, how
yeah.
how many would say, like, Jim, that he's an Indo-Aryan, you know,
whatever.
That kind of thing.
I don't even give a, I mean, I don't pay no mind to that. I mean,
right.
basically, the word brother, you want to define it, yes. Is he a brother in the fight against the common enemy that plagues the entire world? Yes. Is he a brother in the sense where he's going to be
a racial
brother
racial.
Marrying
your daughter?
Not only no is he not, but he doesn't even allude to the fact that he wants to be, nor do we.
Okay.
We are compatible in ideology in the sense that we want to be separate.
Right.
That's the key in the struggle.
Sure.
We have a common enemy. What can we do to help each other? Can we visit each other
right.
and talk over, you know,
a
dinner?
Coffee,
yeah, we can do that. But that doesn't compromise my position.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, it really just strengthens both
right.
of our
And that's
thoughts.
What I've always said. And
really?
I think that...
And if you're not strong enough to really be able to, you know...
Hold your conviction.
That, yeah, then you know what? You're
you
not
don't really know what
you're
in the
struggle. You're not ready for the next
sport.
Level.
Absolutely.
Of that's pretty
but
much
you know,
my
the thing is that also, you know, me personally as me, you know, I see it that way. Now, other Muslims, I can't
that
speak
may not.
For them. You know, they
right.
may not. But
right.
just like other white nationals may not.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
That's just the reality.
Yeah.
But if you can get the groups of people that do from each side
mm-hmm.
together,
yep.
then you have a very...
A powerful combination. And see, and this is where, okay, so I brought up, like, the idea of attacking the Jews versus awakening white people. And this is kind of how I landed at Renegade Broadcasting as my home.
Okay.
So, you know, notwithstanding the pagan perspective, too. So, but I told you about how I have a friend in Bangladeshi or Pakistan. He looks very much like you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had this
who's that? Salman Hussein.
Salman Hussein, right.
Yep.
And we've talked about what would be the bigger target at this point, Zionism or diaspora Jewry?
Yeah, for me, you know, me being...
And by target, guys, I'm only talking about debating and, you know, maybe...
And confronting.
Confronting, right.
Structural target.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, to me, you know, me being, like, I'm about to be a graduate of a college.
Right,
I'm gonna go
which
to,
is great.
You know, yeah, and I'm going to go to master's for business management. And why
right away, obviously, my first concept of getting Jews or getting at them in any kind of way to win would be through banking, businesses, you know, financial structures. You can't win without that.
Well, that's, how, that's how they have the power in the first place.
That's exactly right. That's how they have the power in the first place. And you can start that by local commerce and local bartering, trading.
Right.
Things like that.
Right.
It has to start on a local level, right?
You're right.
Absolutely. And, you know, to be honest, you know, their number one weapon in finance and me, you know, being in that regard, that major, I realize their number one weapon is actually interest.
Absolutely. And let's talk about that because, okay, you have the concept of usury. And this is where really it all comes down to. Usury is non-existent in Islam. Am I correct?
It's non-existent.
And in old-fashioned Christianity, Catholicism, it was also non-existent, but there was a double-edged sword to that because by them making it, you know, verboten or forbidden,
from the Old Testament,
who took over? The Jews. So the Jews became the middlemen of Europe. Now, the Knights of Malta, or rather the Knights Templar,
mm-hmm.
were a huge, powerful economic force during the Middle Ages.
Right.
In fact, this is where all the kind of mythos behind the Freemasons, because they were a very strong, united force that was European that had a banking system. Now, this makes me wonder, why did the church go against them?
Well,
you know, and, you know, this idea, did the church make usury illegal to empower the Jews, or was that just a consequence?
I think that is more of a consequence of the Jews bringing in their financial systems into Europe. And their financial systems, you have to remember this, is that any financial system that the Jews have, it only promotes them, no one else. In reality, that's their way of having the shackles on your ankles.
Right.
Is by basically being subject to their financial system.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and that's
This is why I think the Federal Reserve is so important as a topic. You know, you might be into Holocaust revisionism or the Second World War and reframing the narrative. You might be into just waking up people about black and white crime statistics. You might be into, there's a number of different ways you can go about
right.
this. But I think the Federal Reserve System, the monetary system, the economic, the in light of the last crisis and the crisis we're currently in,
mm-hmm.
You know, nothing is more powerful than showing just how the stranglehold is over the money supply.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if you remember this, look at Eli Rothschild. His great quote.
Yeah.
His great quote was,
"He who controls
the money."
A nation's money supply. I care not who makes their laws. Right.
Because
I believe that might have been Nathan Rothschild.
And they asked him, hey, what do you consider the king and why, you know, because he was in France or some country. And, like,
right.
you know, what about the king
right.
there, are you smart,
right.
you know, whatever, whatnot. He was like, hey, listen,
right.
I don't care who's the king.
Yep.
but,
as long
yeah.
as I control
well,
the money supply.
Here's an even better one, you know, the golden rule. He who controls the gold
rules.
And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, basically, I just wanted to say that that's really what it comes down to. Is this is why, with the left, I do sympathize with them, and I think a lot of them, millions of them, potentially could come over to our side if you show them the slavery system
right.
that they
You know,
today.
The thing is, this is the unfortunate part of that, is that
yeah.
most of them are actually happy being that. That's the major problem. Is that when you have a group of people that...
Are you talking about the masses or the left? Because the left, I'm talking about like the Marxists here, who hate inequality, see that there's 1% controlling everything. And, you know, that whole meme of the 1% and the 99%, that's where we come in and we say, hey, 99% of the 1% are Jews.
Oh, you know? Okay, yeah. The Marxists, that's definitely, you know, that concept, they have it right. You know what I mean? They know exactly...
Sure.
What to do and what not to do and why
yeah.
to do it, you know?
Right.
Well, I was talking about the masses, actually.
Okay,
you know?
Okay.
To get the masses to change, whether
right.
it be Marxist or whether it be just generalized, you know, for unfortunately, they like where they're at.
I agree.
You know, when they come home from work and they took the power on their TV, and they're being controlled by the TV.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and let's be real. Almost every aspect of TV is controlled by Jews.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
No doubt
about
it.
That's not a secret.
Oh, no.
Anyone could go look that up.
Yeah, but you know what, though? But it's great that we live in an internet age today where they can't keep that a secret.
Right.
See, and this is where it's dangerous because, you know, when people just, I think education is so important when it comes to just teaching people, who are the Jews? What are they? How do you find them? How do you identify them? What context, what situations are they going to be in so that you can call them out?
Is what's good for the Jews good for everyone else?
Right. And now that's a big point there because Horace the Avenger talks about anti-white and pro-white, right? He divides everything into two categories. Now, I divide everything into four categories. And this is from a racialist perspective. Hear me out on this one. I'm going to expand on this. I'm going to write something up. I'm going to try and blow it up as much as I can because I think this is where it really hits home is that you have four categories here from a white nationalist perspective with white people. You have white, you have pro-white whites, okay? Those are white nationalists. That's who you're talking with right here in this room, okay? Now, but these you have pro-whites who are also anti-Jewish, you know, and I'm not going to say anti-Zionist. Let's just say anti-Jewish, okay? Pro-whites that know, they're racially conscious, they're aware, but they know about the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's us. Then you've got pro-white, but also pro-Jewish. Now, that's a small group of people who actually have racial feelings. Some of them are like neocons, but they're like pro-white, but they're also pro-Israel. So they say, okay, you know, we should support the Israelis, the Zionists. You know, they're keeping down all those brownies over there. And, you know, they're also really race nationalists themselves.
Right.
And, you know, Hitler shouldn't have been anti-Jewish. He should have worked with them. So they're an interesting group. I have fights and debates with them. But let me tell you something right now. The real true hardcore National Socialists will never trust the Jews ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what's funny about that is that even in Islam, in our Quran, in our Hadith,
right,
it says the same thing.
Right.
Make sure that
we
when
never
you
talk
to a Jew.
Right.
You're very mindful and wary of what they say.
And now here are the other two characters, the other two categories. You have you have pro-white, anti-Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Pro-white, pro-Jewish. Okay. Now you've got anti-white, pro-Jewish. That is 99.9% of the masses. Out there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they know it or not, whether they're conscious of it or not,
right.
They are automatically anti-white due to the Jewish propaganda,
mm-hmm.
and they're automatically pro-Jewish due to the brainwashing of the same, type. Now, here's the last type, and this is interesting. You have pro-white anti-white and anti-Jewish, and this is where, like, some of the ugly truth people kind of came in, and this is where it became a big controversy, because you have some non-whites who are anti-white, but also anti-Jewish, you know? So they might actually believe the Jewish line about how evil white people are, but they also are anti-Jewish, and they, you know, they recognize the crimes of Israel and Nazi Zionists and all that.
I was just going to say,
go ahead. Now, you talk, and then you go, and I'm going to be right back.
Just go with it. I'll be right back. I really have nothing to say other than the fact that, like, you know, the Farrakhan people kind of bleed into that last category.
Yeah, I mean, the Farrakhan people, like, you know,
right,
the Nation of Islam, Kingdom of Islam.
Right. Definitely anti-white.
They're definitely anti-white, but it's also anti-Islamic. And this might sound crazy.
Even though they're the Nation of Islam?
Right, and this is
so now why? Do you consider them?
Well, that's interesting.
Expound upon that point.
Yeah, that is interesting is because of this, is that the Nation of Islam, right, the Nation of Islam, the Food of Islam, as they call it, you know, now, they're not fundamental Muslims. They're not fundamentalists. I'm talking about fundamental Muslims. They do not practice.
At a basic level.
Not even at a basic. This is the interesting part is that, look, in Islam, it doesn't promote racism. It promotes pro whatever race you are.
Right.
But it doesn't promote racism.
Right.
Whereas, hey, I say, your race is not good,
look,
and my race
I'll
is
tell you,
the white nationalists, though, I just got to say this, guys. I have met many Nation of Islam people, blacks wearing their hats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Blacks wearing their hats.
Black Israelites.
You know,
not black,
black Israelites.
That's
like,
a whole separate thing.
They're like the black version of Christian identity.
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, and that's a whole nother, you know, actually, you'll love that. Huh? Okay, basically, I don't know if you know about this, but there are a group.
Yeah.
They're called Christian Identity. They believe that the real Jews of the Bible are Aryans, Europeans, and that
the Jews are Edomites.
Yeah, the Jews are some other group, and we're, you know, but anyway, whatever. The point about Nation of Islam is, like, I have never met a Nation of Islam black man that I didn't like. You know, I mean, they know about the Jews. We go right into it. You know, I never had an issue with them. And even if they are anti-white, so what?
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't care because in the sense that, like, look, that's just where they're coming from.
Right.
You know, I mean, can they unite with me as a comrade against the higher enemy? That's the real question.
Well, I'll tell you like this. You know, when you walk by a five-year-old kid in the street that's Jewish, a 7-year-old kid, whatever age they are.
Yeah.
Could be 90-year-old guys.
Yeah.
You know, when you walk by them, they'll smile at your face.
Oh, yeah.
They'll shake your hand. But I can guarantee you, in their inner hearts, they're looking at you just as cattle, nothing more.
And that's what the Goyim are.
That's what the Goyim are.
In their religion.
Absolutely. And there's no really big difference between that and a Nation of Islam. If you think about it, somebody from Food of Islam, Nation of Islam, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
When they look at you, they might smile on your face.
Yeah.
They might.
Yeah, but you know what? I just get the sense that, look.
They do have a common enemy.
This is the thing. Like, okay. You had two strains of the civil rights movement. You had Martin Luther King, with totally Jewish control, integrationist model. And then you had, you know, Malcolm X, and you have Farrakhan, and you have, you know, I mean, the real leaders going back are Marcus Garvey. You know, there was another guy, I forgot his name. But the point is that the black nationalists who are racialist blacks, who understand the Jews, to me, automatically they are my friends. Automatic, just because they're coming just from the same perspective, only from another race.
Now, I do agree with you. Now, if I had to choose between a Jew and a black nationalist, like a Nation of Islam personnel, I would choose the, you know, Nation of Islam over the Jew.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I also know that his perversive mind thinks that, like, you know,
That's real Islam, right?
That's real Islam.
Yeah. All right, you know, we're going to take another quick break here, and then I want to get to, we're going to talk a little more about the Jews, and we got a few tangents here that we're going to go into. And I also wanted to bring up an interesting topic just about, you know, I forget right now what it is, but we will figure it out, and we'll be back. All right, guys, so that concludes the second segment, and like I said, the last and final part is about a half an hour, so I'll get that up for us next week. Hope you enjoyed it, and that's about it. I don't know who's coming on for the roundtable tomorrow night. Maybe I'll do it if no one else is around, and I think that's about it. Finally did an early show because I had this all ready and I, you know, was raring to go. I mean, it's kind of funny. We were all sitting around kind of partying and having a good time. But then when it came down to it, you know, we got down to brass tacks and, you know, just got serious and we were able to do 2-hour taping there. So that's the majority of it. But the last and final part has a lot of interesting material. We get into some other areas and tangents, but it's definitely worth a listen. And like I said, we'll have that for you next week, combined with whoever else I have come on or whatever else I decide to do. So that's gonna conclude it for tonight. And I guess I'll just take us out here with play a quick song, and we'll be back again. This is Bison BC with
medication. All right. You guys have a good one and take it easy.